Pittsburgh Steeler fans, welcome once again to the Steelers Retro Show. You know what it is. It's that chance to go back in time as we dust off the black and gold DeLorean. We get it up to 88 miles per hour. We have the 1.21 gigawatts, and we're ready to roll back in time to Steeler yesteryear. You know, one of my favorite groups, Tony DeFeo, who is alongside with me, as let me say that first. Hey, Tony, what's going on?
Hey, Brian. Good evening to you. Glad to be with you again.
And Tony, like I was saying, one of my favorite musical groups of all time is the Counting Crows. Love me some Counting Crows. What do you think of them?
They're pretty good. I was into them back in the day. I haven't heard a lot of new stuff from them recently, but I'm sure they're still doing their thing.
Their lyrics are very poignant to me, so I love it. And one of their great lyrics from a song called Mrs. Potter's Lullaby, it's almost an 8-minute song. This song was a great tune, and I'm really not sure about what it's about. It's more about like the rock and roll lifestyle, being on the road and the circus that comes with fame and all of that. And it's really cool. But one of the lyrics that always gets me, it's talking about memories, and it says, "The price of a memory, though, is the sorrow that that memory brings." But when we go back in time with the Pittsburgh Steelers on the Retro Show, there's no sorrow over those memories. The only sorrow is that that stuff's not going on today. But it's so great to go back into yesteryear. And like this weekend, we're going back to the AFC Championship games and one of the greatest championship games of all time for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I can't wait to share that memory, and there will be no sorrow. I'm just spoiler alert, Tony. No sorrow on this one if you're a fan of the Men of Steel.
Absolutely not. And I don't remember this game as a kid, but I remember the locker room celebration afterwards for some reason. And when I was watching the game last week on YouTube, I realized that was my first Steeler memory, watching Terry Bradshaw take his jersey off after the game. That's kind of where it all started for me.
I have some great memories of this. This was an important game for me. And the reason it was an important game for me is, spoiler alert, we're going back to 1979. Actually, we're going back to 1980, but the 1979 season. And that was the last of the dynasty years from the 70s. Something that was really important for me in this is what was going to happen in my life if the Steelers won this game. And man, I didn't want the Steelers to win this game, because if the Steelers won this game, my parents were going to the Super Bowl without me, which, spoiler alert, they did. They left me at home. We'll talk more about that a little bit later in the show. I had just turned 8 years old. And I was not ready for my parents to go to California and leave me home with grandma. So I wasn't sure about this, but things changed for me definitely in this game. And true colors come out, and my true colors were black and gold. Nothing could stop that feeling of watching your team go to another Super Bowl. And it was funny for me at that time, it was expected. I was still pretty young, but that's all I knew. Super Bowl, Steelers are in it. That's what I knew. Yeah. And you find out that they are few and far between. So if I could go back in time to give my 8-year-old self some advice, like, dude, these days don't come very often. So let's dial the DeLorean, the time circuits, to January 7th, 1980, as we go back 41 years, my friend. And the forecast was frigid in Pittsburgh, but the mental thermometer, Tony, in the City of Champions, it was downright tropical. Like I said, they were getting ready to go to the AFC Championship game for the sixth time in the decade. And this would be, hopefully, their fourth trip to a Super Bowl.
It certainly was. It was one heck of a run. And just like you said, when you were a kid, John Stallworth, talking about that 79 season, he said, you know, I came into the league in 74 and we went to the Super Bowl. And by my sixth year in the league, it was expected. I grew up in that. I grew up in that environment. The entire city, that's what they came to expect, not just from the Steelers, but even the Pirates back then had a heck of a run. And they won that year's World Series. And the Pitt Panthers were one of the best teams in college football. So they called Pittsburgh the City of Champions. And it was an apt description at that time.
Definitely was. And I got to tell you what else was going on at that time. I told you that even though the weather was extremely cold, I mentioned that it was downright tropical in the minds of Steeler fans, and it was. And it was also downright tropical on the radio, Tony. I'm going to ask you this question. Do you like pina colada, Tony?
I do. I do. It's a very good drink. And I know what song you're referring to. It's about a guy who was looking into want ads, and the woman he looked up was his ex-wife, right? Is that what the premise of the song?
It was his girlfriend or wife or whatever. They were ended up actually cheating on each other with themselves. But it's a great song. I, in fact, just heard that today by accident. If you like making love at midnight. So the song is actually called Escape, the Pina Colada song by Rupert Holmes. And it was the last number one song of the 1970s. And it became number one again a couple weeks later. I know you're going to love this. TV viewers, and I was, even though I was young, I didn't know all the jokes, but everybody was watching one of the number one shows at the time was Three's Company.
Oh, absolutely. I remember watching it as a kid, and I haven't stopped watching it since.
Are you a Janet or a Chrissy guy?
I'm actually a Terry guy.
Oh, there you go. Terry. Yeah, the nurse. The one that ended up between those two, between Chrissy and Terry, Cindy Snow, Chrissy's cousin, who was an LA Rams cheerleader.
I actually, well, I have all the Three's Company DVD. So on one of the extras, I actually found that out that she was a cheerleader, and that's how she got onto the show. One of the reasons, anyway.
And in the world, Tony, the U.S. was coming off of a grain embargo against the USSR, and Jimmy Carter authorized a $1.5 billion loan to bail out the Chrysler Corporation. And meanwhile, the Steelers were gearing up to play the Houston Oilers in the AFC Championship game for the second year in a row. They played Wild Card Weekend, and then everybody that won a division had the week off, and Houston could not win the division. They were great teams. They could not surpass Pittsburgh, so they were the wild card teams, and they always had to play the week before. But 2 years in a row, they're playing in Pittsburgh for the title. Houston came into the title game with the seventh-ranked defense and the most takeaways in the NFL. At that really seemed to potentially bode well for the Oilers against a team in the Steelers that gave the ball away a league-leading 52 times. Terry Bradshaw, Tony, was a gunslinger back then.
It was commonplace for him to throw almost as many interceptions as touchdowns back then, and he fumbled the football a lot. The entire team, they never really got over the turnover bug that year. And it's funny that a Super Bowl champion would lead the league in turnovers and make it back to the Super Bowl, but that's what the 79 Steelers were able to accomplish.
Steelers scored more points than anybody, and that's even more amazing when you think of how many times they gave it up. So leading the way for Houston in takeaways was safety Mike Rheinfeldt. He had 12 interceptions, Tony. That's amazing to lead the NFL in 1979. And Vernon Perry, who came over from the CFL, he was the defensive star the week before in San Diego. He had four interceptions and a field goal block in that game, and he returned 157 yards before being tackled by the holder of all things. But the defending champs, they still had three Lombardi trophies on their resume. They were hosting a dome team on a frozen field in 22-degree weather. Even Pirate World Series MVP Willie Stargell was on hand for this one. I remember seeing him in the crowd wearing a cowboy hat, and I was like, whoa, wait, why is he wearing a cowboy hat? The Oilers are from Texas. He can't do that. The Pirates and the Steelers, they were both champions at that time. That's why we call them the City of Champions. And the great thing is we had a retro show maybe about a month back where the Steelers were in Cleveland right before the World Series started. Lynn Swann was not playing that game. He was injured. He was wearing the pirate cap with the Stargell stars on it on the sidelines the entire game. Those teams, they had batting practice together. They shared a stadium. They would do workouts and they'd hang out, and they were really fans of the other. It was a family. And it's funny, not just family for the Pirates, but family for the professional sports teams back then. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was a great time to be a fan, and it's one of the few reasons why I kind of wish I was about 10 or 15 years older, because it would have been fun to be a teenager or in my early 20s and enjoy that time. It had to be a fantastic time to be a sports fan in Pittsburgh.
Okay, so let's get into kickoff, Tony. We will be back right after this to get into that with the Steelers and the Oilers in the 1979 AFC Championship game. Stick around right after this message. Welcome back to the Steelers Retro Show. My name is Brian Anthony Davis. Alongside me is Tony DeFio. We are so glad to be talking about one of the greatest AFC Championship games in Pittsburgh Steelers history. on the Steelers Retro Show from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Tony, let's get into it.
I can't wait. Let's dive right in. Three River Stadium was popping at this time. Let's see what happens.
The Steelers won the opening kickoff, Tony. They elected to receive. So the black and gold were in Oiler territory almost immediately, courtesy of Terry Bradshaw passes to John Stallworth and runs by Franco Harris. However, we just talked about him before the break. Vernon Perry wasn't done yet. He intercepted a Bradshaw pass to Benny Cunningham from the Oiler 36. He returned at 75 yards for the score. 2.5 minutes in, Bum Phillips' team led 7-0. Just like that, we talked about how the Steelers led the league with 52 pickoffs. They're down early in the AFC CG. Oh my gosh, people were worried, Tony.
Oh yeah, it was definitely a stunning turn of events, a stunning way to start a game. And Vernon Perry, the Oilers hero from the previous week from the divisional round, it wasn't a great pass by Bradshaw at all. I don't know what he was looking at. Perry picked it off, and I mean he went untouched 75 yards, and just like that, it was 7-0 the visitors.
After the Steelers got the ball back, they had a punt. So Dan Pastorini and the Oilers took the field for their first drive of the game. However, the league's leading rusher, Earl Campbell, was stopped for 2 yards on 2 carries. And LC Greenwood, Mr. Hollywood Bags, that was my guy, Tony. He sacked Pastorini to force a punt. Behind a timely pass to Swan and a scramble on 3rd and 14 from Bradshaw for 25 yards, Pittsburgh was threatening deep in Oiler territory. But the drive did stall at the Houston 4. Here comes Matt Barr, the rookie from Penn State. He hits from 21 yards out. And the Steelers cut the lead to 7-3. But the Oilers began to storm back with a 72-yard drive. Behind a 45-yard screen pass reception for Tim Wilson and Pastorini connecting with Ronnie Coleman for 32 yards, Houston was driving at the Steelers 16 at quarter's end. So the quarter's over. They're still leading. The steel curtain stiffened down once again, though. An Austrian, Tony Fritsch, that's a guy I remember from football cards, Tony. He added a 27-yard field goal to extend the Houston lead to 10-3 early in the second quarter. My gosh, a quarter of this game is gone, and Houston's up 10-3, Tony. There were a lot of nervous Nellies in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely, and it was huge that the Steelers' defense stiffened at this time and kept the Oilers out of the end zone, because a 14-3 deficit, ooh, that would have been a even more stunning turn of events.
But we talked about earlier how the Steelers, even though they turned the ball over a lot, they were a quick scoring team. They could get back into it. They were back in business on the next drive at their own 33. The Blonde Bomber, I love that guy. I love that nickname too, Tony. He tore up the Houston defense with swift passes to Blyer, Harris, and two of them to Swan. With 9:55 remaining in the first half, Benny Cunningham caught a pass from number 12 over who? Vernon Perry for a 16-yard touchdown and a 10-10 tie. Perry was not Superman, I guess. And he gave one up there, and that was huge. It seemed like Benny Cunningham was always big in these games that we talk about. He was a really good tight end, Tony, and he helped tie the game here.
He was, and he was a matchup problem for Perry. I mean, we talk about guys like Gronk and Kelsey today, but I mean, this was a big tight end, and a safety like Perry trying to cover him, it was a mismatch. And Bradshaw and Cunningham, they were friends off the field, and they had a great rapport on the field.
They indeed did, and we were hoping that they were going to get back into this even more, but Houston wasn't done. They were driving again, but they were driving despite Earl Campbell being anemic. He was the number one rusher that year. He was absolutely fantastic, but not in this game. He could not get going. He only had 15 yards on 17 carries the entire game, Tony. The steel curtain shut him down immensely. And that was a big deal. Pastorini was connecting to his receivers instead of getting Campbell going. And he connected with Mike Renfro, who was their top receiver then. But number 82 was changing hands, and he fumbled at his own 49 after being hit by Donnie Shell with Mel Blount recovering. Now, every time we do a game from 1974 to 1987, Donnie Shell always has a turnover. Donnie Shell was the man, Tony.
He absolutely was. And when you rewatch these old games now, it's like you said, you're wondering what took them so long to induct this guy, to enshrine him in the Canton, to make him immortal, because he was such a clutch player for them. And he was always coming up with big hits, big turnovers at clutch moments. And he was a very special safety.
Absolutely. And to follow great running by Blyer and Harris on trap blocks by Jerry Mullins, who was subbing for Steve Corson, who was out injured in the game. The Steelers set up a Bradshaw touchdown pass to John Stallworth from 20 yards out with 2:35 remaining in the half. That's a big deal now at this point. It's 17-10. Houston, they tried to answer, but rookie Dwayne Woodruff, there he goes. It's really weird to call him a rookie because he played for the Steelers so long. He intercepted Pastorini at the Pittsburgh 45. And here comes Matt Barr to close out the half from 46 yards out. He misses. So yeah, Barr had two seasons with the Steelers, but this is one of the reasons that he did not last long in Pittsburgh because he wasn't exactly accurate early on. They closed out the half and it's 17-10.
If you remember those early years with Barr, he did not have great range and he did not have great accuracy. In fact, one of my earliest Steeler memories is that devastating loss to the Bengals at Three River Stadium the following year, 1980, when he misses that really a chip shot field goal that would have given the Steelers a much needed win. They just barely missed the playoffs that year. So yeah, Matt Barr had some work to do, but it is a testament that kickers, just like anybody else, can get better. And he did improve throughout his career.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Down 17-10, the Oilers got the football to start the second half and an opportunity to tie the score. The problem, though, was that George Perlis's defense was a picture of absolute dominance, Tony, as they forced another Cliff Parsley punt. This was temporarily good news for both squads as Theo Bell slipped, trying to field the ball at his own 38, and the pigskin squirted into Houston's hands at the Steeler 42. But once again, Houston squandered their best field position of the day. For a short time in this game, though, Houston lost communication in their headsets, so the Steelers had theirs disconnected, and both teams had to use hand signals temporarily. That's pretty neat, Tony. If one team was out, both teams had to be out.
Yeah, that's a good rule. That's a good way to do it. I mean, you have to keep everybody on an equal footing as far as I'm concerned. So it was, I've always been behind that rule.
After another Steeler punt, Pastorini lined up under center with good field position again in an attempt to tie. He was walloped, though, by L.C. Greenwood and left for a play and came back less than 100% in this game. The Three Rivers crowd then came into play on 4th-and-2 from the Steelers 37, and what appeared to be a first down was nullified when Houston failed to get the snap off in time. Cue Parsley to punt once again. On a drive in which Mike Renfro recovered a fumble in the vicinity of 5 Pittsburgh defenders, Mel Blount was drawn into a chuck penalty and caught a key first down. The second-year man from TCU was involved in one of the most controversial calls in title game history, though. With 1:30 left in the third, Pastorini threw a 6-yard rainbow to Mike Renfro, that guy we were talking about, number 82, for an apparent touchdown in the corner of the right end zone over Ron Johnson. The replay showed that Renfro had clear control of the ball with his left foot down and his right foot hitting the pylon. Now, NFL Films, Tony, showed some movement in Renfro's hands. If instant replay was in effect, the call on the field very well could have been reversed, and Pittsburgh fans would have been very hard-pressed to argue it. It was much more borderline than when it first appeared on NBC television. That's the thing. The announcers were like, yeah, this is definitely a catch. They're getting ripped off here. But later on, a lot of people in Pittsburgh and out of Pittsburgh said, you know, that was actually probably not going to be a catch. But back then, it would have probably been turned around, Tony. The officials conferred, and referee Jim Tunney wrote it out of bounds. Houston was absolutely livid. They still can't stop talking about it. Steelers fans accepted the gift. It was now second down and goal from the 6, and the Steeler defense held the Oilers to a field goal, Tony. It was 17-13 at the end of the third. Your thoughts on one of the craziest plays in history and one of the reasons we definitely have replay now.
I think it passed the eye test as far as the catch. I mean, I've never seen the NFL. He said it was an NFL Films version, but I've never seen that. But in terms of the NBC feed, it definitely passed the eye test. If I had to give a reason why maybe they called it incomplete, and I realized that they said that they were, the official was shielded, but I think Renfrew, for whatever reason, he lifted his back leg up really high before touching his left toe down. And I think that might have fooled the official into thinking that he didn't get both feet in bounds. That's the only reason why I think that play was overturned. But the Oilers had a gripe. However, at best, and Elsie Greenwood and a bunch of other guys said this, at best, it would have tied the game. And the Steelers, they weren't going to be thrown off by a tie game in a big moment. They would have come back and scored, which is what they ultimately did anyway.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you said that, Tony, because history, everybody that's not in Pittsburgh wants to go ahead and poke holes at this game and say, oh, the Oilers would have went to the Super Bowl if this would have happened. We don't know that. And you know the resolve of the Steelers back then. You mentioned that those guys would have not let this happen. No. And when we talk about the final score, you will realize that. The Renfrew play was unfortunate, but Pastorini even claimed after the game that it was not the sole reason that his team lost. What a lot of people forget is that Houston had so many opportunities to reclaim the 4 points at this time, and they failed to do so. In the fourth quarter, the Steelers iced this game. It started out on 3rd and 20 when Bradshaw found a sliding swan for a first down. 3rd and 20, Tony. After a 5-minute clock draining drive, Matt Barr kicked a 39-yard field goal. It was still only a touchdown lead, but Pittsburgh led 20-13. With Houston nearing desperation mode, the impressive Pastorini, which I really thought he was a good player, he began to engineer a game-tying drive at his own 11 with 9:42 remaining. But after number 7 and White found Guido Merkins over the middle, disaster struck. Mel Blount, Shard Merkins, and Donnie Schell recovered. Now, this was opposite of what happened before when Donnie Schell hit Renfrew and Mel Blount recovered. So they turn it around, flip the script. It still is okay for the Steelers. Schell recovers at the Houston 45 with 5:46 left. This Steeler team back then, when they had to ice the game, get the kill shot, they were able to do it. Bradshaw only needed to get his team in field goal range for the victory, but he went for it all. Rocky Blyer caught and ran for 2 first downs while the precious seconds would tick away. Then on 3rd and goal from the 5, Blyer took the handoff and burst into the end zone with less than a minute remaining. That is the way the game ended, with a final score of 27-13. So if you want to be unlike Dan Pastorini and say that's not the reason we lost, and want to say that if that would have been reversed, Houston wins it, it's hard to say so, because that backs up everything you said, Tony, because right now they win 27-13. When they have a chance to ice the game, they were able to do so, and they did so to go to the Super Bowl once again, Tony.
Oh, it was so fantastic. And again, if that game's tied going into the fourth quarter, I think the Steelers, instead of winning 27-13, they win 27-17. Again, they were not fazed by these kind of moments. I mean, this is a team that played in arguably the greatest Super Bowl of all time the year earlier against the Cowboys, maybe the second greatest dynasty of all time. And they slugged it out with them, and they came through in the clutch and won. So I have no doubt that they would have still won this game, even if it was that play was ruled a touchdown.
And you remember me telling you at the beginning of the show that I was worried about this game, and I was actually hoping that the Steelers wouldn't win because I was an 8-year-old and I was selfish and I was afraid of my parents going on a plane to California, never coming back. But what happened, the little a-hole in me turned around, changed his tune. I'm jumping up and screaming for my Steelers. I was absolutely loving it, but it didn't take me long to get back into my Steeler fanhood. But something happened just about 3 years ago. My dad and I called up my dad and I said, Dad, Terry Bradshaw is going to be about 2 hours from my house. We have an opportunity to go meet him. Let's go do it. And my dad's like, absolutely. So we go and we're standing in line, and a buddy of mine had a helmet that he wanted me to get signed. So, and it was actually a game worn helmet. Bradshaw looked at this helmet and he's studying it. My dad was taking pictures of it, and he's like, wow, I think I wore this. I'm like, you did. And I told him the story. He's like, wow. And he was so cool. I just wanted to, even though I paid money for the ticket and everything, I just didn't want to go crazy and be like Chris Farley and go, hey, remember when he did this? Remember that? Oh, that was cool. I didn't want to do that. But what I wanted to do, I shook his hand. I was really quick. And it was really weird because Terry Bradshaw wanted to talk. And so my dad leans in And he goes, hey, I just wanted to tell you, I was at Super Bowl 14. That was just a great memory for me. And Terry Bradshaw stops, puts his head up in the air like he's in thought. He goes, yeah, you know, that was a rough one. We won that game, but that was a tough game.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, I'm still pissed off that they didn't take me. And Terry Bradshaw looks, why didn't he take you? That's exactly what he said. Why didn't he take you? I said, well, because I was 8 and he wanted to take my mom and set. Terry Bradshaw looks at me and says, hell, son, I wouldn't have taken you either. Exact words.
That's hell, classic son, Bradshaw.
I wouldn't have taken you either. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm still mad about it. I haven't gotten over it yet. I'm laughing.
And
I don't know if Terry Bradshaw realized that I wasn't really serious, because my dad and I, we joke about this all the time. My dream would be to go to a Super Bowl with my dad. And I'm blessed to still have my dad. And that's what Terry Bradshaw wanted to make sure he reminded me next. He said, son, exact words, Tony, son, just be glad you have him.
That's fantastic.
And I was like, wow. This guy, who I was actually trying to get away from Terry Bradshaw because I just didn't want to waste his time and everything, because there was a big line. And here, this guy was so cool, wanted to talk, would have talked to me longer. He would have held up the line. That's how cool he was. But to say that to me, and it's advice that I didn't need because I'm very family oriented. I'm glad. But it was so cool that he was able to say that to me. It's just a great memory I have. I feel like I'm not even closer to my dad, but I'm closer to Terry Bradshaw because of that conversation. And so when I think back about this game, I think about family and I think of how blessed I am to have it and how blessed I am to have the fandom that I have for a team that employed a guy like Bradshaw and a team that was a family. And that is when we talk about going back in time with memories and the sadness that a memory brings and the elation that a memory brings. I tell you what, the only sadness is for me, that team is not together anymore. And we keep losing guys from that team here and there. Every couple of months, we lose another member of that team. And it just makes me ache. But I'm so glad to have the memories of that 1979 team. And I'm so glad we could go back in time. One of the great victories. And the one thing that I hate about this victory is that it's tainted with some people saying that they would have lost that game if they would have had a replay. And like you said, Tony, they would have not lost this game.
Oh, absolutely not. They would have found a way to win. And, you know, one final thought is that, you know, kudos to those Oilers teams. I mean, I remember watching a NFL film special about those 78 and 79 Oilers teams, how they had to go the wild card route to the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row, and how their fans embraced them in Houston. And both years after they lost these games, they had a welcome home rally at the Astrodome that was almost filled to capacity. I mean, they really loved that team. And Dan Pastorini talking about it broke down crying because, you know, they got so close a couple of years in a row and they just couldn't get over the hump. And it just goes to show you, you know, you can have special memories, obviously, from Super Bowls and everything, but coming close and fighting to get there and coming up short, you can develop great memories from that too.
It's an absolute shame, Tony, that this team did not get a chance to win a title. This love ya blue team from the Houston Oilers. So I agree with you too, because they, even though they were division rivals, that was a true team. Probably one of the NFL's best all time teams to never win a title. So thanks so much, Tony. I'm so glad to go through this game with you. It's a lot of fun. And next week, we're going to start getting into some great Super Bowls for the Steelers. And I can't wait to do that with you as well.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, there's so much to talk about with these games and so many special memories and iconic moments and images. And I just can't wait to get into it.
And we will do that. For Tony DeFeo, my name is Brian Anthony Davis. This has been the Steelers Retro Show. So thank you all for joining us. We will be back once again. Remember, behindthesteelcurtain.com for each and every one of your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. Look, we are not just a podcast platform. We have so many articles on the editorial side. We are a big family of information and it keeps coming. In fact, the Steelers might not be playing, but the information is, and you're getting it first from behindthesteelcurtain.com. So for Tony, my name is Bad. And remember, you could take us away. We don't mind, but like Huey Lewis says, you just got to promise us we'll be back in time.